Swami's programs continued to grow in popularity. More people began attending the morning sessions as well. And I began to think that Swami really was managing to acquire a society of some sort after all. Then one morning, out of the blue, he made an announcement at the end of his class. "I'm going back to India in 2 weeks," he said rather casually. Jaws dropped. People glanced at each other and whispered, "How could he just be going back to India? What about his temple? What about all of us?" The Swami rose and retired to his apartment. Several of us hung back in the temple to have an urgent impromptu discussion. "I can't believe it," Jan said. "Did anyone have any idea this was coming?" "I kind of did," admitted Wally. He was a good-natured 21-year-old who I thought of as the temple's resident scribe because he always walked around with a little book in which he seemed to be writing down everything the Swami said. He was one of the people who hung around the temple during the day and therefore spent more time with the Swami than the rest of us. "I knew he was on a visitor's visa," he said, "and I knew that it was coming up for renewal. But I didn't know that meant he was going to have to leave. He's renewed it before, and I just figured he'd renew it again." "Well, someone's going to need to look into the details of this," I said. "We should try to see if it can be renewed without him having to leave the States. That evening we met again to see if anyone had found out more. Bruce, a husky wrestler in his early 20s, had called immigration and discovered that visitors from India could renew their visitor visas only once, and we couldn't get him onto another kind of visa because the law didn't permit a change of status for Indians unless they first returned to their native land. We knew the Swami was a law-abiding type and that we wouldn't be able to convince him to overstay. The only option was to try to renew the visitor visa again. Allen Ginsberg's been here, Wally said, suddenly lighting up. Maybe he'll help. We should ask him, at least. The next morning, at Wally's urgent request, Ginsberg came to the temple to discuss the matter with all of us after the Swami's class. We all gathered on the oriental carpet in front of the Swami, who sat on his small dais. We knew we wanted the Swami to stay, and Ginsberg knew we wanted him to stay, but he didn't seem sure about the Swami's intentions. Swamiji, do you want to stay in America? He asked rather matter-of-factly. The Swami knew from us that Ginsberg was famous, and though he never treated him any differently than the rest of us, he didn't seem to want to come right out and ask him for a favor. He slowly looked around at us one by one. I had never seen such a sad expression on his face before. He seemed forlorn, like a father looking at sick children that he now had to leave alone to fend for themselves. Swami cleared his throat and said in a whispery, hoarse, almost imploring way, "Well, I have my students here." Ginsberg seemed convinced. "I know a congressman," he said. "I can have a bill put in the House. He'll be able to extend, I'm sure. No problem. U.S. immigration can be arbitrary at times. But I've got some good connections. We need a lawyer." He looked at us. "You guys got any money?" We looked at each other, maybe a little. "Okay, look, I'll donate a few $100 for a start, and that'll get things rolling, but I want it back." 2 days later, he turned up at the temple with good news. He'd been able to get the Swami another 6 month extension on his visitor's visa. Bruce had gone round all the regulars at the Swami's evening program to get donations to cover the legal fees, and we gave Ginsberg back his $300, so grateful that he had given us a little bit longer with the Swami. Bruce had even been to Central Park and had approached strangers, mostly tourists, begging for money so his father could stay in America. And personal experience of Brahmananda Swami when he asks you for money, he's really hard to say no to. He looks you right in the eyes and he's direct, and it's hard to say no to him. And the next chapter is called Celebrations with the Swami. September was an unseasonably warm month in 1966. Hungarian and Polish immigrants in t-shirts were sweating and cursing about the heat as Raymond Marias, and I made our way up Second Avenue early one Tuesday afternoon. 21-year-old Ray was one of the Swami's in-crowd, one of the people who saw him every day. Unlike me, Ray spent most of his time at the temple, chanting, cleaning the place, or talking to the Swami. He had been a comic book illustrator and had some experience in the world of publishing, but now he was mainly interested in pursuing the Swami's philosophy. The Swami had been talking about starting up a magazine called Back to Godhead, and he was pleased when he heard that Ray had some publishing experience. Back in India, before he came to the States, the Swami had written, produced, and distributed the Back to Godhead magazine all on his own. But now he was saying that Ray could be the editor, since he had a background in the profession. Hey, you know the Swami is going to have an initiation on Friday, Ray said to me. You want to be initiated? The invitation sounded a bit half-hearted, extended out of courtesy to a wannabe. I was in a different space than the other guys. For one thing, I wasn't single, while they all were. For another, I had wanted to retain my own space and time, and I was a bit older than most of them. I was still working as a musician on the weekends, and I was kind of on the outside. I spent my days doing my own thing, and I turned up at the temple for the morning and evening programs. Increasingly, though, I was feeling like I wanted to be part of the inner circle that seemed to be forming around the Swami. I wasn't privy to all the discussions that went on in the Swami's room on a daily basis, so I had never heard of initiation. I had no idea that the Swami initiated people, and still less idea of what that might involve. The word initiation sounded kind of like a bid to join a secret society. Of course, the Swami was far from being a secretive person. If anything, he was just the opposite. Still, initiation sounded like a mystical rite of passage and had daunting connotations for me. What is initiation? I asked Ray. Well, the Swami said it means that he formally accepts you as his student and you accept him as your spiritual master. Also, he said that as a student, you accept your spiritual master as God. Ray was soft-spoken, but his bright blue eyes shone with enthusiasm. What do you mean, as God? I said. I don't know, that's just what he said. We walked a little further, saying nothing. He seemed to be waiting for that to sink in. So I started at the top of page 80. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Text 39. Aste stanur ivai katra.
Aste stanur ivai katra.
Divyam Varsha Shatam Stiraha
Divyam Varsha Shatam Stiraha
Vasudeve Bhagavati
Vasudeve Bhagavati
Nanyad Vedo Dvaham Ratim
Nanyad Vedo Dvaham Ratim
Aste Sanuri Vai Katra
Aste Sanuri Vai Katra
Divyam Varsha Shatam Stiraha Vasudeve Bhagavati
Vasudeve Bhagavati
Nanyad Vedo Dvaham Ritim
Nanyad Vedo Dvaham Ritim
Aste Stano Rivai Katra
Aste Stano Rivai Katra
Divyam Varsha Shatam Stiraha
Divyam Varsha Shatam Stiraha
Vasudeve Bhagavati
Vasudeve Bhagavati
Nanyad Vedo Dvaham
Aste sanuri vai katra.
Aste sanuri vai katra.
Divyam varsha shatam stiraha.
Divyam varsha shatam stiraha.
Vasudeve bhagavati.
Vasudeve bhagavati.
Nanyad vedo dahanatim.
Nanyad vedo dahanatim.
Aste sanuri vai katra.
Aste stanori vai katra
Divyam varsha shatam stiraha
Divyam varsha shatam stiraha
Vasudeve bhagavati
Vasudeve bhagavati
Nanyam dhavaham
ratim Nanyam dhavaham ratim Namaste.
Namaste.
Remains.
Stanu.
Immovable. Eva.
Like.
Ekatra. In one place.
In one place.
Divyam.
Divyam.
Of the demigods.
Of the demigods.
Varsha.
Varsha.
Years.
Shatam.
Shatam. 100.
100.
Stiraha.
Stiraha.
Steady.
Steady.
Vasudeve.
Vasudeve.
Unto Lord Krishna.
Unto Lord Krishna.
Bhagavati.
Bhagavati.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Na.
Na.
Not.
Not.
And yet,
anything else,
Veda,
did not,
Udvahan, possessing, Ratim,
attraction.
In this way, he stayed immovable in one place for 100 years by the calculations of the demigods. After this time, he developed pure devotional attraction for Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and remain fixed in that position. In this way, he stayed immovable
in one place
for 100 years by the calculations of the demigods. After this time, he developed pure devotional attraction
for Krishna.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead.
And remain fixed in that position.
Prabhupada's
purport. Pahunam janmanam ante ganavamam prapadyate vasudeva sarvam iti samahatma sudurlabha. After many births and deaths, he who is actually acknowledged surrenders unto me, knowing me to be the cause of all causes and all that is. Such a great soul is very rare. Bhagavad Gita 7:19. Vasudeva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is everything, and one who knows this is the greatest of all transcendentalists. It is stated in Bhagavad Gita that one realizes this after many, many births. This is also confirmed in this verse with the words Divyam Varsha Shatam, 100 years according to the calculations of the demigods. According to the calculations of the demigods, one day, 12 hours, is equal to 6 months on earth. 100 years of the demigods would equal 36,000 earth years. Thus King Malayadvaj executed austerities and penances for 36,000 years. After this time, he became fixed in the devotional service of the Lord. To live on earth for so many years, one has to take births many times. This confirms the conclusion of Krishna. To come to the conclusion of Krishna consciousness and remain fixed in the realization that Krishna is everything, as well as render service unto Krishna, are characteristics of the perfectional stage. As said in Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila 22:62, Krishna bhakti koile sarva kama krita hoy. When one comes to the conclusion that Krishna is everything by worshipping or by rendering devotional service unto Krishna, one actually becomes perfect in all respects. Not only must one come to the conclusion that Krishna is everything, but he must remain fixed in this realization. This is the highest perfection of life, and it is this perfection that King Malayadvaj attained at the end. Om Gant Manandasya Gidanjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmavitam Yena Tasmaya Shri Gurave Namaha. In this way he stayed immovable in one place for 100 years by the calculations of the demigods. After this time he developed pure devotional attraction for Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and remained fixed in that position. So Prabhupada begins the purport by quoting this verse, Bahunam Janmanamante. After many births and deaths, he who is actually acknowledged surrenders unto me, knowing me to be the cause of all causes and all that is. Such a great soul is very rare. This is one of his very, very frequently quoted verses in all of Prabhupada's preaching, lectures, purports, room conversations. And so the conclusion is, or the thought is, that there are many things that people do to try to realize the Absolute. The first thing that people do is start to inquire philosophically. And the essence of the philosophical pursuit of the Absolute Truth, before a person knows anything about the Vedas or Guru Sadhu Shastra, before a person is just a little intelligent and has some speculative ability and philosophical way of thinking, and it becomes somewhat frustrated, as Queen Kunti says in the Srimad Bhagavatam, only a person who is materially exhausted can feelingly pray to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As long as a person is, there are many people who pray to God, but as long as you're self-satisfied, you think, well, things are okay here, I have some money, I have a little position, I have this, I have that, then and in the future I'm going to get this, and I'm going to do that, this will happen and that will happen. As long as you're thinking like that, then you're obviously not materially exhausted. Materially exhausted means, I think we all know what materially exhausted means. It means you've been through so much in this world, even in this one life. We've been through so much, so troubles and things, and you just say, I can't, this is too much, I can't take it. That's a material exhausted. So when you come to that point of view, then you can begin to feelingly pray to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Or even if not at that point, a person can be philosophically inquisitive. Like, is there something beyond this world? Is an incredible thing. My consciousness, my identity is very amazing thing. What is this life? What is this thing we call life? What is this universe? What is this? What is happening here? What's going on? I don't know what's going on. I remember as a kid lying in bed at night, my head on my pillow was right beside a window. And in the summer, you know, the window's open, I look out and there's all the stars in the sky. And, you know, we've all had experiences like this. You look in the sky at night and you see how vast it is, and you start to question. You question, naturally, a person questions, what is this? What is all this? So the person who's philosophical like that starts to question. And the essence of philosophical pursuit is called neti neti. Neti neti means you start to wonder, what is the Absolute Truth? And you start to eliminate things. And you say, well, the floor, that's not the Absolute Truth. It's not the floor. A tree, that's not the Absolute Truth. And you go on and on and on. What is this the Absolute Truth? Is that the Absolute Truth? And you keep eliminating things. And so that's the philosophy. And that's good to a certain extent. That can bring you to the point of understanding an initial understanding of Brahman. Not full Brahman realization, but an initial understanding of Brahman that There's an all-encompassing, supreme something. You don't know what it is. But you can come to that point by philosophical speculation, by neti-neti. But you can't. And you may go on in that, in pursuits like that for many births and deaths, but you can't come to the, in order to come to the realization of Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth, he who is actually acknowledged and surrenders unto me to be, knowing me to be the cause of all causes and all that is, such a great soul is very rare. And why is such a great soul very rare? Because to come to the point of surrendering to the Absolute, the Personality of Godhead, it actually means surrender. For the philosophical speculation, there's no surrender involved. Surrender means surrender to a person. You tell me what to, like you go in the Marines, and the drill sergeant starts yelling at you and barking orders, and it's like, boy, I have to do what he tells me. I mean, I don't have to. I could run away, leave the Marines. But basically, he's telling me what to do, and I have to do what he tells me. That's a little bit of surrender. So surrender means to a person. Surrender means to a person. Satrupa Maharaj gives one a good example of that in relationship to Prabhupada. He tells a story, one of the important episodes in his life. As a devotee, he was Prabhupada's servant and secretary at the same time in Los Angeles. Prabhupada was staying in Los Angeles. And oftentimes the duties of secretary and personal servant for Prabhupada were split up between two people. So a servant meant cook for him, clean his room, all the personal things. And secretary means a lot of correspondence, a lot of really demanding secretarial duties. If you've ever done anything for your spiritual master, you know that it's really demanding, because you have to get everything just right in cooking, cleaning, secretarial work. So he was doing it. He was doing it, and he was happy doing it. And then one day, Prabhupada wrote a letter, or dictated a letter that he typed, Satrupa Maharaj typed, and Prabhupada said in the letter, he said, and I'm enclosing this other thing, this other document in the letter. You might have heard this before, I don't know. So, but it's really an instructive story. And so he said, I'm enclosing this thing in the letter. And so when he was, then he got busy cooking and everything, and he typed up the letter and mailed it out, and he forgot to put in the enclosure. And then, like later, so the Prabhupada asked him about it, and he said, did you put in that enclosure in the letter? And Satrupa Maharaj said, he said, well, no. He had to admit, no, I didn't put it in. I didn't put it in. And he had to admit it to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada got like really heavy with him. He's like, what? I mean, he didn't yell at him, but he was just really heavy. He's like, what is it? You didn't put it in? I told him there'd be an enclosure. You didn't put it in. That makes me look makes me look bad. And he said, and Satrupa Maharaj says in relationship to that, and that he says that, well, if another godbrother of mine had been like that demanding on me, like, why didn't you do that? Why didn't you do that? And he would have just said, well, lay off, take it easy. I made a mistake. I didn't mean it. He says that, but he couldn't say that to Prabhupada. You can't say to your spiritual master, come on, lay off. I forgot to do it. So Prabhupada was like relentless on him. He wouldn't let up. And the first thing Satyavrata Maharaj said, he said, was, well, he thought, I have to say something. And he said, well, I guess it means I don't take your instructions seriously enough. And Prabhupada said, he just shrugged that off. He said, no, come on. He said, no, I don't accept that. I know you're a serious devotee. I know you take my instructions seriously. But so he just rejected that. And then Satyavrata Maharaj, he's just thinking and thinking, and he's like freaking out mentally. And then finally he said, well, then I'll write another letter and I'll put the enclosure in it. And I'll say, it was my fault, I forgot. And here's the thing he asked me to send. And then as soon as he said that, Prabhupada said, all right, then do it. And then he didn't say it was complete, it was forgotten. Not forgotten, but he dropped it. And then Satyavrata Maharaj went on with his duties. And that other story that Piari told a few months ago, I had never heard it before, about the devotee that Prabhupada sent out to buy some eggplant. I think eggplant at the grocery store. Does anybody know exactly what happened? And for some reason he got distracted and he didn't. I think he brought it back, but then when he got back, he was talking to Prabhupada. He said, I was out there and I was distracted by seeing the girls, and I was distracted and whatever, it was something, my mind was disturbed, and it was going on and on, and Prabhupada said, did you get the egg? So, it's like just a very, very simple but very instructive example from Prabhupada. It's like the smallest things, the seemingly smallest things that Prabhupada said have like really important, crucial meaning for our understanding of what it means to be a devotee. It means to be a devotee in the neophyte stage is like, of course you're distracted. You go out in the material world, of course your mind is, you're attracted to sense objects. That's a given. there's no mystery in that. But did you follow the instruction? So we're all in that position where my mind is disturbed. I'm thinking of this, I'm thinking of that. But am I doing my duties? Am I chanting? Am I worshipping the deities? Am I following the instructions of the spiritual master? Of course, we have to try to keep our minds off the objects of the senses, but we all know that it's not that easy. I mean, we're not successful. We can be pretty successful, and we're not in the same position as the helpless materialist who's just like you see a dog and he's got a big long nose and he follows his nose everywhere. His nose says go there, he goes there. His nose says go there, he goes there. So the materialist is just like that. His eyes say look here, he looks there. His ears say listen to that, he listens to that. But so we're not in that position because we have higher knowledge. We have knowledge of Krishna, and Krishna helps us control our senses. But the main thing is: are we performing our duties? Are we accomplishing the most crucial, the most essential things that we're supposed to do every day under the instructions of the spiritual master? So that's what it means to surrender. So sometimes people ask, what does surrender mean? Sometimes devotees will ask, like, what does it mean to surrender? Because we hear the term all the time. I surrender, complete surrender, fully surrendered soul. We hear it all the time. And so what does it mean to surrender? Well, first and foremost, it means to just do what you're told. The Prabhupada, one quote that I like from Prabhupada is, surrender service is the most agreeable, or I forget the word he used, the most agreeable form of association with the spiritual master. Devotees are always, I want to associate with my spiritual master, I want to associate with my spiritual master. The most important thing in associating with the spiritual master is just to follow his instructions. And that's the beginning of love, or that's the essential quality for love. If they say, I love you, in the Bible, Jesus says, if you love me, follow my instruction, do what I say. So if I say, if a husband says to a wife says to a husband, I love you, and then it's like, well, did you do this? You were supposed to do that. Did you do that? No, I didn't do that. Did you do this? You were supposed to do that. No, I didn't do that. And you say, well, but I love you. And so at least we have to be dutiful and obedient. And then over the course of time, that develops more and more and more and become more and more committed to follow the instructions in every way, not only physically, but mentally, and psychologically, in every way. Krishna consciousness is all-encompassing. Every aspect of our life is meant to be guided by the spiritual master, by Guru and Krishna, the desire to serve. So after many, many birth and death, a person will actually surrender to Krishna. And then you know Krishna to be the cause of all causes and all that is. If we understand that there's nothing but Krishna, I'm Krishna, you're Krishna. We're not Krishna in that sense, but we're not different from Krishna. There's nothing about me or about you, physically, mentally, anything. There's nothing about any of us that's not God, that's not Krishna. We are part and parcel. We are part and parcel of Krishna. So, and not me and you, but every molecule, every atom, every ray of sunshine, every planet in the sky, everything means everything. Every breeze that blows, not a blade of grass moves, is separate from the will of the Lord. So when we know that, when a person is convinced of that, that there is nothing but Krishna, then we have to surrender. Then naturally surrender. Because, I mean, you won't get to that point without being a devotee anyway, so you're already surrendering. But then when you realize, and the realization intensifies that there is nothing but Krishna, then there's nothing to do but surrender. There's nothing to be achieved in the material world separate from Krishna consciousness. People think, oh, I'm trying for money, I'm trying for love, I'm trying for fame, I'm trying for this, I'm trying for that. These are all achievements that people are pursuing. But there's no achievement in the material world that is worth anything. It's not worth anything. It's like if you're in prison, you say, I got a better cell today, or I got an extra serving of food on my tray. So it's a big achievement. Or the guard didn't beat me today. Or that's a big achievement. I stayed on the basketball court for 5 extra minutes today. That's an achievement. None of those, they're achievements from a small point of view of being an inmate in a prison, but from the position of freedom, so-called freedom, in the outside world, that's not an achievement. So whatever we think of as a beneficial or achievement or happiness, in this world is not considered at all valuable. Nothing valuable. Stop there, ask questions or comments. I just want to say one thing, my own comment, is that every day pretty much I make comments in class, and I started doing that about 2 years ago, because for years and years, you know, I'd be in class and everybody would be sitting in class, and at the end of the class, the speaker says, okay, any questions or comments? And a lot of times nobody says anything. And it's like, you know, the speaker feels encouraged if somebody's asking questions or making comments and there's some discussion. And anyway, the thing is that there's so much to be discussed about the discussion of the philosophy is unlimited, and we're meant to discuss it amongst ourselves. So I figured, well, I'm going to start saying something at the end of class. And then after a while I started taking notes so that I wouldn't forget the things I wanted to say. So anyway, that's why I do comments usually. But I mean, if somebody else comments first, then, you know, I'm not attached to saying anything. Well, sometimes I'm, you know, like when you're a little kid in school. I remember when we were in like first, second grade, little kids, the teacher asked for questions or said, how much is 10 times 10? And the kid is like, I know. So sometimes, you know, I'm a little enthusiastic, but mostly I'm just trying to comment, just to discuss. If I think I have something interesting to contribute. Okay, stop there. Any questions or comments? Yeah. In this way, he stayed immovable in one place for 100 years by the calculations of the demigods. After this time, he developed pure devotional attraction for Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and remained fixed in that position.
The other few, I don't know, classes ago, we were trying to figure out what's the duration of day and how the demigods in this. So it's been this, it's answered, but it's can you make it clear? Like, I don't know, it's like 6 months, one.
Yeah, so Prabhupada says here, 6 months is 12 hours of the demigod.
Ah, so 1 day, 1 year, that's actually.
Yeah.
Alright, there we go.
Yeah. Oh, there's one other comment I wanted to make. And then I'll stop. So many times, like in the Chaitanya Charitamrita especially, there's all kinds of statements like this throughout the Shastras. But like throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam, you read... like generally a lot of times there's a benediction at the end of a chapter, like, and whoever hears this with faith or recites this with faith in the morning and evening will very soon attain love of God. There's all kinds of things like that. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita there are statements like that all over the place, and anyone who hears the story of Lord Jagannath in the temple, I mean Lord Chaitanya in the Jagannath temple, or whatever the story is, anyone who hears that story will very soon achieve pure love of God. So these things are not said lightly. It's not like, oh, just speaking figuratively and there's no substance behind it. If Krishnadas Kaviraj says it, or if Srila Vyasadeva says things like that in the Srimad Bhagavatam, then it's going to happen. We're going to become pure devotees. We're going to achieve pure love of God. We're going to go back to Godhead. And very soon, That, I don't know exactly what very. Sometimes very soon means now. And Lord Chaitanya sometimes, oftentimes benedicted somebody and they become a pure devotee immediately. But even if, like in the example of, what's the name of the devotee who begged some rice from the lady, and he's a brahmachari, and Lord Chaitanya said, you know, was like really strict, and like a brahmachari cannot do that. Do you remember his name?
His name was Madhavide, I guess.
Madhavide.
And I always think it was a junior Haridas.
Junior Haridas?
Who was actually, who left his body. Junior rejected him and then he committed suicide and then he was singing for Lord Chaitanya.
Yeah. But before he committed suicide and came back as a Gandharva, I'm saying, before that, Lord Chaitanya's devotees, they went to him and they told him that Lord Chaitanya says you won't be able, you'll be able to see him in like a million births.
This is Vasudevadatta, it's a different story.
No, Murari.
Murari?
What's his name?
I get confused.
That's when Lord Chaitanya was giving benedictions to everybody.
No, not at that time.
He couldn't get in, and Lord Chaitanya accused him that he's preaching Mayavadi or something. And
I'll have to review.
Mukundadatta. And then he was like really happy. I'll see him in million of.
Yeah, right. And he's and he was joyful. You know, ordinarily it's like, oh man, a million births.
He didn't hear what they said because he was very happy that he
was here. All he heard was, Lord Chaitanya will see me again. I'll be able to see Lord Chaitanya again. And if it's in a million. So anyway, he took a million births as very soon. And sometimes, oftentimes, Lord Chaitanya, like the fisherman, Lord Chaitanya went out wandering at night, got out of the Gambira, went through the locked doors and the walls, and he was out wandering as usual in the middle of the night, and they realized that he wasn't there, and they went out looking for him, and they saw this fisherman coming, and the fisherman was going Krishna, 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 and he couldn't stop saying Krishna, Krishna, and they said to him, they said, oh, he must have seen Lord Chaitanya because he was mad for Krishna. And they asked him something, and he said, I caught what I thought was a big fish in my net, and as soon as I touched it, I started chanting Krishna, Krishna, and I haven't been able, I can't stop. So they went and looked, they found him in the ocean or on the shore.
Was he really mad after Krishna? Because I remember he was thinking it was a ghost, and he asked him to save him from that. So he was chanting Krishna, but he didn't really appreciate, I guess.
Yeah, he didn't know what he was doing. He said, I saw a ghost, and ever since I touched this ghost, I've been haunted, and I can't stop chanting Krishna. Anyway, so very soon, it was a quote I read, somebody put it on Facebook this morning, a quote from Prabhupada from the Nectar of Instruction, the third instruction, and in it, I can't quote it exactly, but it's short, but Prabhupada said, I guess it's in the purport, that the process of Krishna consciousness is so pure and powerful that once having begun, a person will be dragged to perfection, to the conclusion. So we should be confident of statements like that. I'm not much of a devotee, but yes.
Yeah, I just, because I see you closed the books in the session with Bhagavad and Gita, I just wanted to ask one question. It's about surrender. What I was thinking, because I just listened to one lecture of Niranjan Swami, and he was saying, because he read recently reread Śrīla Prabhupāda Lilāmṛta, again. and about how Srila Prabhupada was establishing himself as a spiritual authority. So he was, but like first he came, nobody would accept him as spiritual authority. After some time, some of these young kids, they would think, he's a nice person, he's a nice person. But still, they would not accept him, like they would not think, he was always speaking about guru, but they would never think he's a guru. And before that, he's like, Nashish Swami saying that he would never tell them really what to do.
Yeah.
But when they figured it out, he's a guru, he's a guru. Then he told them, now you have to chant and that and that. And that like about surrendering, I was just thinking, at least how I understand that. So you can really do what you were told without any questions, when you have really faith. Then if it's like sounds to you, how can I do it, you just do it. Otherwise, even it's like some authorities, but it's also beneficial to inquire why you want me to do it if I have some doubts, yeah, and when to discuss. And maybe even sometimes I cannot do what you told me, like unless it's like, because when it's you guru, you just, you do it. Yeah, I just wanted your comment on that.
Yeah.
It's maybe because of rebellious nature, because some people, they're very like submissive, but they're
not submissive. And the statements that in Bhagavad Gita that a person may not be able to follow all the instructions, but if he doesn't, he doesn't resent the instruction, you may think, oh, I can't do that, but I wish I could do it. And someday I'll be able to do it by Krishna's grace. And that's also, as long as, but if a person thinks, I can't do that, that's ridiculous. And no, you shouldn't even ask me to do that. And that's a bad mentality. But if you think like, well, I can't do that, I feel bad that I'm not surrendered enough or I'm not determined enough, I can't do it now, but I want to do it, I wish I could do it, and in the future, by Krishna's grace, I'll be able to follow that instruction. So that mentality is good. You can't. That's a surrender.
Wednesday night in the lecture, you know, they said that, I didn't say it, but I was reading that out of the gate. It's trying your best.
Yeah.
You don't have to reach perfection in your service, it's just trying your best.
Yeah. We're neophytes. Neophytes means beginner. Beginner means you have a lot to learn. Okay, I'll do it. What's that? I'll go to Srila Prabhupada.